Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I am Jim Galante. He is Andy Shea. Andy, how are we doing this week, my friend?
Doing good, Jimmy, but man, college football season is over. Like, it's over. Like, over.
It is. But you know what, Andy? I still consider the playoffs now bonus college football. You know what I mean?
Sure.
We're used to being done like January 1st, then a little bit, you know, 1 week. Now we got to at least mid-January, still getting football. And I know for some fan bases, they're just ready for it to be over. Penn State fans specifically, they were ready to end it, you know, week five or six, Andy.
Yeah, the Penn State season, 2025 season jumped the shark when they made the decision to fire James Franklin. That's just football went sort of, I mean, you still have games to play, but where the football program was going to go next, the direction was put in limbo when they fired him, and it made everything just, you know, kind of riding rocky seas because you don't know which direction was coming next.
Right. And you know, I'm ready to use the expression turn the page, but this wasn't turn the page. It was new chapter, new book. This was not just the end of the season, but the end of an era. This was the end of the James Franklin era.
So it was it doesn't matter whether the coach is there, the new program leader coach is there. How's that? That's my term that I've come up with college football coaches. Now they're program leaders too, head coach / program leader. When there's a transition in that, there is no, it's not like a stable, smooth, you know, while you hold the pieces of the base together and you build from there. That's not the case anymore because, you know, with the free agency and the amount of money, you completely turn the apple cart upside down, empty every apple out of it. You turn it back over and you start putting apples, different apples back into it. Still trying to make an apple cart, but you're starting from scratch, Jimmy. You're basically, when these transitions happen, on 89 or 90 of 100 fronts, you are completely starting over. And that's just the way it is because it's very, instead of being stable in its base, it's more transactional and transitional in its base. And that's just because of the balance of power shifted to be more equal. But it's awesome. I think it's awesome for college football because you get new.
You do, but it's 50 players on Penn State left the roster when right. James Franklin left. Much of the recruiting class left also.
Yeah, there was no recruiting class, basically.
Right, which meant Matt Campbell had to, as you put it, start from scratch with his recruiting class, with the team itself. And it was interesting, Andy, I hadn't really thought about it this way, but I just saw someone talk about this, and it does make sense that in bringing in a new coach, now we saw with Kurt Cignetti, and we will talk about the national championship game, we'll get there, but he was probably the first one to set that model of bringing much of his James Madison team with him. Now, I don't think Indiana said, oh, if we hire Kurt Cignetti, we'll get all these great players from James Madison. But that's how it worked out. Now we're seeing similar with Matt Campbell. He's bringing all the Iowa, he's brought over 20 players with him from Iowa State's roster. So it's actually, the thought is some programs may even be looking, you know what? Bring in a current coach because he'll be able to bring in his team with him.
It brings, yeah, I think that is a, I think that's a dangerous blueprint to bank on, to be honest with you, Jimmy. I still think what Kurt Cignetti did is a unicorn, because the devil in the details, he nailed a couple things that allowed them to go from 2023 when they hired, they didn't have anything. Like, they were a football wasteland, right? From a football wasteland to a national championship in 2 years. Is that a realistic expectation for anybody else? Anybody, no, Jimmy?
No, it's not. However, Andy, however, in the situation, and let's use Virginia Tech as an example. By bringing in James Franklin, not only did they bring in his prowess as a recruiter, they brought in his ability to bring many Penn State football players with him, many from the recruiting class and many from the current roster. I mean, he brought his quarterback in. His quarterback's, you know, he brought in a wonderful tight end in Luke Reynolds, many other players, and, as we said, much of that recruiting class. So, you know, to me, I wonder, in Virginia Tech's case, Virginia Tech hired James Franklin, who was considered, you know, a top-tier coach. Maybe not an elite coach, okay, among the top three or four best. But he was among, say, the top 10 names in college football. He brings name value to that program. But in addition to that, he's able to bring many Penn State players with him. He has immediately up the expectation level for Virginia Tech. What that does, in my opinion, Andy, is it raises expectations for his first year. It raises the talent level. And if they could go from a losing record to a winning program, all of a sudden, you know, if they're 9-3,
they're building a statue.
A lot of credit will go to James Franklin, and you've now upped the standard at Virginia Tech. Just like Kurt Cignetti now at Indiana, they're getting the very high-level transfer players. I know money's part of the equation, but now going to Indiana is analogous to going to Alabama or Georgia or Ohio State or Oregon. Indiana is now among those teams, and if you're a recruit, you will now go there. So I think this, what seems like a temporary high, you know, from getting some of this talent in, could really entirely change a program. Now, using that for the Penn State situation, you know, how well did Matt Campbell do in hopefully cherry picking the talent from Iowa State? Will that translate into a 10-win team his first year?
Okay. So to answer your question, which has about 19 layers to it.
Sorry about that.
I start with two things. One, is the quarterback elite? Is the quarterback the right one? Is that the it guy? And can they be coached and developed to compete in the best conference in college football, right? Which is the Big Ten. Sorry, SEC, your performance is going to rate you second among the two power conferences, among the Power Four. However, you've got to get the quarterback right. And what do your ISU players and the six or seven other guys you bring in that you like, or the backup quarterback that you recruited, et cetera, et cetera, what does the development look like? And is it next level? And that is, they're bringing in developed college football players. Can they develop them further, which is what Cignetti and his staff did better, to play a variety of styles of football including a physical Big Ten game where you take teams' best shots and still have all the tools in your chest to take that and come out on top. That's a sticky thing. So you have to bring them in. But still, at the end of the day, recruits, free agents, transfer portal kids, free agents. What is your talent development? That is the only thing I stand on, Jimmy, that has not, will not, and has not transitioned. You might be getting a fourth-year guy that has 1 year of eligibility left that's played a lot of college football. And say he played that college football at, you know, JMU and transfers to Penn State. Can he play in the Big Ten at Penn State week to week and develop even further? It just seemed like so many players that Cignetti had developed at another level. They went from being good, talented football players to elitely developed football players. And they had a half dozen of them do that. And that to me is the talent development is the secret sauce, Jimmy. If you want to know what it is, yeah, you have to pick the right guys, but that's only one third of the equation. The talent development, to me, at the next level, feels like two thirds of the work.
And Andy, you said something earlier about, you know, Cignetti being a unicorn. I think
winning a national championship in such a short period of time.
Right. I mean, that's crazy. It may be the greatest turnaround in college football history. Okay.
It is, for sure.
And when talking about his model, you know, we're not talking about Northwestern or Purdue gets a new coach. Are they going to be the next national champion? Ain't gonna happen, Andy. Ain't gonna happen. Okay. This was a unicorn, one of a kind, one time.
One of a kind.
However, is there a model there? You know, are there things that we've seen from other teams, maybe not quite the same success level as Indiana had, who ultimately got a national championship out of it, but are there things that we can takeaways from it that we could learn? And I think there are, and I think there's already teams, you know, following a bit of the model. Andy, since we're out of time, we'll talk about it more right after this break. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two of our show. He's Andy, I'm Jim. Andy, we're talking about Indiana, of course, quite a bit. I mean, they are the story. Winning a national championship, coming from out of nowhere, and over the last 2 years, it's not a fluke. Cignetti and Indiana did this 2 years in a row, made the playoffs in year one, and then just built on that with a no doubt best team in the country this past year. I'm not looking for any team specifically, even Penn State, to duplicate that. However, I do think, Andy, that they showed some things to us about how the game has changed. Partially, it's the fact they did it the ultimate way. But I do think the model for going into the portal and being able to build that way, we've seen it already, you know, at the quarterback positions, the prior national championship champion, Ohio State, brought in a quarterback from outside. Miami, runner-up this year, quarterback from outside. Oregon has been doing it, bringing in the outside quarterback. Among other teams, we saw Colorado go from a nobody team, bringing in portal players. They're not making the playoffs, but they became at least a team of interest, a better team. And so I think now programs, and I'll give you one last example before I let you take over here, is Ohio State. They've been among the playoff teams. They had the fewest starters from the portal, okay? The fewest. And it didn't work out so well for them. Do you know that they had over 30 players go into the portal this year? I think that's Ohio State saying, hey, wait a minute. We still have some dead weight in our program. Here's a way for us to catch up. So I think portal isn't just a nice little thing for the good teams, just fill in a couple players. It's going to be a main part of how you build your team.
I think I need a little more example to say that it's going to be the cornerstone of how you build your team, but it's elements of the transfer portal and free agency. Right now, we're still in that new part of it. Like, and there's going to be, you're going to have to figure out. We didn't know Ohio State was behind until 2 weeks ago when they had 30 guys go into the portal, and they're kind of, then you're like, oh, yeah, they're behind now, right? Like, you don't know you're behind a little bit until you're behind. But the when you talk about the model, right, you're like, and you look at Indiana, for example, right? So when I think of them, I think of a couple things. I think of the quarterback position, which I already mentioned. How good did Mendoza make those receivers, right? They're good college football receivers. I can't remember his name, number 80. Made a couple catches against Penn State in that game, right? I think he had 7 catches going into the Penn State game. But from the Penn State game forward, that guy became an integral part of the offense. A quarterback makes those around him better. They had 2 hard-charging good running backs. They continued to ascend and get better. Their development went to the next level. The weakness of their team was their offensive line. It's not wasn't a bad offensive line. They just weren't elite or dominating, but they were good. They were very good, and that was enough. The other element that I think is really important is that, and it goes back to part of the development, is they become leaders on the field by their example, right? I think you could look at Indiana's defense and say at each level, 1, 2, and 3, at each level, they had a player become an on-field leader that everybody else looked to, saw, recognized, and inspired them to follow and be better. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for like those 2 or 3 leaders that aren't like rah-rah, cheer-cheer, I'm your leader, listen to me. They're not those guys. They're this is what the standard is. Get your standard to my level and follow me and we'll play like this together. That's, I think, the secret sauce in terms of the development, that you find those sort of player leaders that become the example that makes people perform above their talent level, right? They bring them along above their talent level. I think that was one of the keys for Indiana, that those elite players in there made everybody around them better.
Well, first of all, that number 80, Andy, Charlie Becker. Okay, next, I'm going to say something, Andy, here that pains me more than you could imagine, but I'm going to say it anyway. I'm going to quote you. Right players more important than best players.
Right players better than the
best. It crushes me to concede, Andy. You said that long ago, and I think that's what Kurt Cignetti has done a great job at. And it's when you bring in a guy, now these guys, their public image, you never know if that's for real or not, okay? But Mendoza just seems like a character kind of guy too, okay? That he's got those, that it factor at quarterback, good character guy, the kind of personality you want leading your team beyond the talent that he had. So I give Cignetti a lot of credit for bringing the guy in for both factors, the talent, the it factor, the culture setting, you know, the right kind of guy. And, you know, you started by saying, well, you're not ready to call the, you know, the transfer portal the cornerstone of how you build a team. And I don't think it necessarily has to be, but I think it's now a, has to be an integral part of how you build your team. You can't have an, I'm not sure you could have an elite team now just with the talent you brought in. Now, you know, the teams that used to be able to, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, all that depth, you know, they're losing that depth. No longer can they
be taken from them.
Right. They can't stockpile the talent anymore. Correct. And as much as so many people hate the transfer portal and the money that comes with it, the fact is, Andy, you know, we have had no Southeast Conference team in the championship game for the last 3 years.
Correct.
The Big Ten has surpassed them. The Big Ten not only has won the last three national championships, Andy, but they've done it with three different teams. And, you know, I've brought this up before on the show. A year ago, when we looked at Michigan and Ohio State, we thought, aha, that secret sauce is bringing back the same team. You know, guys who could have gone to the NFL stuck around. What I think we were half right. I think it was that they were bringing back veteran players. The right guys, and they are mature players. There's a difference between a 23 and a 24-year-old and a 19 and 20-year-old, no matter how many stars they have. Now, you still got to bring in the right 23 and 24-year-old. They might be already part of your program, or they might be part of another program that you're bringing in. At Indiana, they didn't have that talent base, so they had to go find it and bring it in. Credit Kurt Cignetti. He not only brought in talented guys, the best guys, he brought in the right guys.
This is the only thing I know that I can say with the strong conviction when it comes to, you know, how this is playing out in front of us, you know, right now, is I think it's a 50-50 proposition in terms of your transfer portal and your sort of drafted talent, your recruited talent, right? Here's the thing. Your roster now, like before, and even 2-3 years ago, at the beginning of the transfer portal, you were looking at you could look at your roster and project out, you know, you're going into the 25 season. Well, you could project your roster to 26 plus a recruiting class, and then you're looking at 27, what will still be left. You can't do that anymore, Jimmy. Your roster now, your roster building is now year to year. In other words, you look at what you have and build it from there. There is no projecting out 2 and 3 years of what your roster is going to look like. You have to start after you're done. You start roster building again right away. That's the only way to do it.
You're right, Andy. That is exactly it. And you may have to wait till the end of the portal window. Correct. To realize what you need. We saw that last week at Duke, and now we're past Duke. A stole is the wrong word, but they offered the Tulane quarterback a lot of money to come over to Duke, okay? And apparently, Andy, he was on a 2-year contract, both 25 and 26. He didn't indicate he was going to enter the portal. Everything was he was sticking around. The last day of the portal, he said, oh, by the way, I'm hitting the portal, leaving Duke like, what? You have a 2-year contract here. You owe us another year. So
did they sue him?
Yes. that's going on. Here's the thing, Andy. I had talked about the quarterback from Cincinnati going to Texas Tech who had a $1 million buyout. So that was paid. The quarterback from Duke, he was, I guess it was $4 million a year. So there's a balance of $4 million on his contract for his coming year. So it, I'm not sure it was technically spelled out as his buyout, but the thought is he will owe them the balance of his contract if he left, that $4 million. So I think one of, you keep hearing Miami wants him and is willing to pay him $10 million. Well, out of that $10 million, probably $4 million of that is for the buyout.
Back to Duke.
Right, back to Duke. So he, when you see the outlandish money, now I think part of it is the buyout. Now, what has to be done and clarified is in these contracts, is that specified in the contract? Oh, you can get out if you pay, you know, the balance of it. So that's going to be a legal issue. I think those kind of questions are going to be in the court, need to be standardized. That's it for quarter two. When we come back, your questions and we ask Andy.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. We know that's time for Ask Andy and your questions. Here we go, Andy. Let's get right to it. Dave from King of Prussia says, I understand how teams can now buy talent to compete, but yes. Can you please explain to me how Indiana wins a national championship with a bunch of three-star talent?
Well, it might have been originally three-star talent. I think Kurt Cignetti was bringing in grown football men who were not three stars in their development. And it's not a model. He just, like we said earlier in the show, he hit the right buttons. You didn't know which buttons they were to push. The quarterback is never a bad button to hit a touch them all grand slam home run on. That's never going to hurt you. That's always going to give you a better opportunity. But it was on the second tier, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, that where I saw that they sort of from the beginning of 24 to winning the national championship, the way that side of the ball progressed and moved along under Cignetti was, to me, the sort of hidden key and one of the bigger reasons that they became bigger, stronger, faster, player leaders, player example on the field leaders. All of it came together on that side of the ball to give them, again, touch them all, grand slam home run, no doubter with Mendoza as the quarterback. That was the straw that mixed the drink, but all the ingredients in the drink came on the other side of the ball that allowed them to sort of be that more complete, balanced team. So their transfer portal kids are not recruits. They're developed college football players. They've got, some a year, most of them two, some of them three. They have meat on the bone, and they have, you have to look at them differently in terms of, what they were as recruits, but now they're developed college football players.
Andy, have you ever seen these articles? And I'll be honest, I always read them. Always read them. Where they say, let's read, how would it look if we redid the draft from 2 or 3 years ago?
I hate those things.
Oh, I love it.
I hate
mostly them. Because in seeing that, gee, why did you pick that guy first? And here was a guy who we picked in the second or third round who's an all-pro quarterback. You see it. You see it in every sport. Well, I think if you look at that model, in essence, the transfer portal is a do-over on recruiting. Okay.
Good point. I'll grant you the point.
If you look at Penn State players who we know well, you know, the names and faces and their star ranking, boy, you know, we see, you know, players like Sean Clifford was not necessarily a highly rated quarterback, or Trace McSorley might be a better example. If they would redo his recruiting year, he'd be a top pick. Or here's another one. Saquon Barkley was ranked like 104th among players in his recruiting class. You redo that class, Saquon Barkley's going to be picked a lot higher. Anyway, my point being, if you, instead of bringing in players as a recruit, you get to watch them play for 2 or 3 years in college, and you get a chance, a do-over. Not only are they developed, you begin to realize, hey, this guy who was a, you know, 3-star, he's got 5-star talent. You know, I've brought this up before on shows, Andy. Mendoza from Indiana was the 134th ranked, not player, but quarterback coming out of his class. He's now a Heisman Trophy winner and going to be the number one pick in the draft, okay? So much different than where he was when recruited. We now know a lot more about these players after a couple years. Kurt Cignetti just was really, really good at recognizing that and bringing in the right players, not just good players, Andy.
To go one step further with Dave, and then we'll move on. Kurt did not pick in the players he brought in potential. He brought in what he knew would work.
Yep, he did, and he was exceptional at it. All right, let's go to here's Charlie from Tyrone. Andy, could you help us all out here? Jim roots for those loser Mets who were a great disappointment. Penn State greatly underachieves. Philadelphia Eagles look sad losing in the first round of the playoffs. Can you please tell Jim to stop rooting for Penn State? P.S. If he starts rooting for my Steelers, I think I will go crazy.
I'm sorry, I can't help you, Charlie. I'm a Flyers fan in hockey, so we've been out of the playoffs for half a decade now. And I know we won a Super Bowl with Tom Brady, but I'm a Buccaneers fan. So there's a lot of suffering and badness that comes along with that. So I don't know. Your Steelers might be in for a tough transition. I don't know. We'll see about that. But, yeah. Stop rooting for Penn State, Jimmy.
Charlie, first of all, you don't have to worry about the Steelers. If there's anything about me you should know, I am a loyal fan of my team. And yet I have brought up the fact of being both the Mets fan and Penn State fan and how their programs are in sync. I became a Met fan when I was like 8 years old, Andy, okay? And when I was 9, was 1969, they won the World Series, the Miracle Mets. Penn State had back-to-back undefeated years in that same time frame. I'll also point out the Mets' last World Series was in 1986. You know what that year also was? The last Penn State National Championship. So the two teams are in sync in many ways. Sorry, Charlie. Anyway.
Sorry, Charlie. That's the old Tuna commercial. Sorry, yes. Charlie.
Rob from Florida says, I'm really excited to see this Penn State team, especially with all the new players coming in. I believe that Matt Campbell will be a breath of fresh air after the Franklin era. Does this team have a chance to compete for a playoff spot this season?
Oh, man. Rob goes straight to the 18th green, doesn't he? I'm excited to watch Matt Campbell mold Clay at the next level. That's simply he did very good at Iowa State. Loved his process and the way he would do it. Does it transition to the next level? Because the Big Ten is the elite in college football right now, and Penn State wants to be considered among one of those top four or five teams in the Big Ten. Qualify for the college football playoff. The schedule is favorable. It's, to me, it comes down, they could be a college football playoff team if their quarterback is elite.
Good point, Andy. You've got to get the quarterback right.
Nutshell. You know? That's it. Break it down. Nutshell. Give me one answer. If the quarterback's elite, Penn State's a college football playoff team.
And I think the nobody thought Mendoza was a Heisman Trophy level quarterback coming in. Okay, coming
even
from
when
Cal.
He came from Cal, yeah, and right, he was good right at Cal, very good.
So I think there's, you know, a lot of quarterbacks, Arch Manning, Drew Aller, who was the quarterback at Clemson, or was it Nussmeier?
Klubnik.
But Nussmeier, yeah, was where
LSU.
Was he?
LSU.
Okay.
Yeah, come on. I got you, Jimmy. I got your back.
Thank you. You got me covered. But, Andy, those were quarterbacks coming into this year that I suspect all of them were more highly regarded than Mendoza.
Absolutely.
And, you know, no one would have been surprised if any one of those would have been a guy who would have, you know, been up there holding the trophy in New York City with the Heisman Trophy. So you've got to get the quarterback right.
Correct.
Is Rocco Beck going to be that guy? Don't know. It'll be fascinating to see. But to your point, Andy, yes, I've been saying it all along. Boy, that's a schedule next season. No Ohio State, no Oregon, no Indiana. Also, no Iowa, no Illinois.
Correct.
That's as favorable a schedule as you're going to see. Okay, let's go to Jonathan in York, who says, I keep hearing a lot of talk about limiting players to one free transfer. Do you think that will happen, and would it help the mess that is college football?
I don't think that'll happen. I think some people, it can be conceived as a mess or a very Wild West transition time. They're both the same thing. I think my personal opinion is I like two after your initial commitment. I think one's too limiting. I think two is a better number. I don't think the four or five that you're seeing now, the three, the four, the five, I don't like those. I think one's too limiting. I like the number two, Jonathan.
You know, Andy, the problem with it is this. Sure, that would be great. It'd be wonderful. How are you going to get that through the court system?
Right. You're not. How are you going to get it done? I don't think you can.
You're not. And that's why it kills me when guys like John Calipari stand. First of all, John Calipari should never stand up as the voice of reason, morality, and what's right in college sports. Never. Never, 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 ever, ever, ever.
Ever.
Okay?
Never, ever.
Ever. Let's start with that. But they don't address, sure, that's fine. Wave the magic wand. No, ain't going to happen. The first time a player says, hey, you're restricting my ability to make money, you know, boom, it gets thrown out. That's not how you do it. I've said it before. I'll say it again, Andy. The way to fix it, and I think it's starting to come. It may take a couple of years, but those multi-year contracts where there's a buyout. Now, the kid from Cincinnati, we saw the $1 million buyout. You know, the Duke thing where there's a $4 million rest balance of the contract. They're using that kind of as the buyout. There you go. There's your solution, Andy. That will work, in my opinion, And you don't need any court to tell you it's an agreed upon contract. Hey, there you go. Not a problem. That's it for Ask Andy. We got another segment to go. Stick with us.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. He's Andy. I'm Jim. Andy, I am now going to do something for the first time today in our show. I'm going to go look at my agenda. We went down some rabbit holes. Which is fine. I love it. Andy Shea rabbit hole, go down. That's fine. But I actually wanted to start the show, Andy, asking you specifically about the college football championship game. We've talked about it this week other folks, but just wanted to get your final thoughts on the game itself, and because I can't help myself, the Miami player throwing the punch after the game.
Yeah, you can't help yourself. Hella good football game, first of all. Championship worthy. Just a slugfest. Miami was a worthy finalist. They proved themselves to be a worthy finalist. Inside the football game, you know, here's what I'll say. Mendoza was a Heisman Trophy player. He didn't have his quote-unquote best game, but he played really good football, right? Like,
and he had a Heisman moment.
He had a moment, and that moment was there for Beck, right? The opposing quarterback, yep. The winning drive potential. And he threw a pick. And it all centers around the Heisman Trophy winner was the best player and took over and was not afraid of the moment in the game. When I looked at Miami, the defense was really good. That's like every defensive lineman, I think, could be an NFL starter tomorrow. Crazy. And I thought in that what Miami had around Carson was actually better than the quarterback himself to a degree. And when it came the moment where he had to perform at that next level, he couldn't. The other players around him did. The running back who threw the punch, fantastic. The receivers, fantastic. Wasn't drops. Marginal throws, were mostly caught. Miami did everything. I knew they wouldn't be able to make it a street fight because Indiana loves a street fight too. Indiana's the chameleon. They can play any kind of football game you want. You're not going to show up with your A game, they'll drop a 50 burger on you, right? You want to play physical, grind it out, let's swap punches football, fine. They can play that too. So that in the end, Indiana's adaptability and having the best player on the field perform in that moment like it, that's why they won the national championship game. It was a toss-up all the way, though, Jimmy. It was a hella good football game. That's it for me.
It was my one thought, Andy, and, you know, it's said oftentimes any close game turns on a couple plays. More often it's a mistake than a great play. And, you know, I just believe that block punt, when they showed the replay of the one a guy in the back row as a protector. Boy, was that a terrible effort. And when you and I chatted with this, you brought it up, the great point, and it's so relevant. And I thought about this at the time. Indiana, late in the game, they had a second and one, okay? And really, if they get the first down, it's essentially end of game.
End of game.
And their very good offensive lineman twitched. 5-yard penalty. They never got. False
start almost cost Indiana a national championship.
Exactly. So to me, you know, when you hear, and I know it's so much coach speak, but it's true. The turnover, the missed block, the penalty. And there were a lot of penalties on Miami, you know, like on a third and long play and wrong, bad time for the penalty. And just the last thought, Andy, I'll give it. The Miami player who threw the punch, the running back, to me, there perhaps is nothing more cowardly in sports than when you have your helmet on and you throw a punch at a guy who doesn't have his helmet on. I don't care what was said, what was done previously, that you do not do. You do not do it. He did it, and he did it after a loss. And you know what? Losing doesn't build character, Andy. It exposes
it. It reveals it. Yeah, it reveals it.
That was it. All right. Well, let's move on. Let's get to, you know, Penn State and Matt Campbell and what he's doing in building a team. And this crossed my mind earlier, Andy, when you were talking about all these Iowa State players coming in and how will they hold up in the Big Ten? I had looked a little bit at this roster construction and where did those Iowa State players come from. And I'm wondering if it's no coincidence that it's heavy on the offensive side of the ball. The
it quarterback, is very heavy.
The running back, the tight the end, coordinator. the wide receivers. And, you know, I was looking at that more on the question of, gee, how much will that help, you know, Matt Campbell implement his systems, having all of the, you know, specialty players, the skill players come from his old program. But I also wonder if that's also a case of, you know what, on the defense, we got to build in a way that we didn't in the Big 12, including monster tackles.
Yeah, the offensive side of the ball is an easy install. The defensive side of the ball is where a lot of, you know, sort of off-season, spring practice, camp, that's where a lot of the heavy lifting is going to be done. So by bringing it, plus he brought his OC with him, right? So we know that. And so that is, there will be guys that will compete to unseat Iowa State guys, but the initial install will be done and sort of ran through when you're looking at, well, are you the running back one or running back three? All of that's going to be done with Iowa State players to install continuity. But eventually there'll become a point where some of the talent will outshine some of the sort of experience. And you're going to have those will be key transitions. Like, okay, we brought our running back in. He's good at the install, knows the offense, blah, blah, blah. But this guy's better. We got to get this guy on the field and put him in that. Those are going to happen in some places, but the initial heavy lifting, it's not going to be a hard install offensively because they brought so many pieces with them. Because you can't install both at that high of a level. There's going to be a lot more heavy lifting and transition that will have to happen on the defensive side of the ball. And that isn't an indictment or speaking anything to, you know, to Lynn and the new DC they brought in from USC. That has nothing to do with him. He just knows he's going to have a heavy lifting and a lot of work to do.
Yeah, the changeover is so complete. And again, yes, there are some Iowa State players in. But again, with a new coordinator, as you pointed out, Andy, there's going to be major changes there.
Major.
You know, my question to you is, what do you know of Danton Lynn? What's your confidence level in him?
So when he did a great job at UCLA, right, under a Chip, and he was sort of a surprise pick to a degree as the DC there, and he showed his metal right away. That was with a lot of baseline talent. There wasn't a lot of elite talent at USC, but the elite talent that was there, he developed at an exceptional level, and several of them became NFL draft picks. USC hires him away. They already have a good bit of talent in place. Can he structurally make them better defensively? Remember, that was the period when he was hired when USC could score 42 points, but they couldn't stop you from scoring 45, right? And they were losing football games. He fixed that right away and continued to develop players. Last year was more of a solid baseline defense. They were a more balanced football team, USC was overall, because their defense was, you know, whenever you think of USC, you think of their offense and the quarterback, and, you know, their head coach is a quarterback whisperer and he's an offensive guy. Their defense was on par with that. That to me was sneaky. That's sneaky good stuff that he was doing on defense to bring them up to that balance where you didn't see USC as a one side of the ball team. That's something to keep an eye on. He knows how to build from the ground up to level the playing field. Will that happen in year one? It's going to take a long haul work, but I certainly expect that to be the case by year two, for sure by year two.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And again, you know, I keep going back to Indiana and Kurt Cignetti, and
you can't help yourself. You love the unicorn. It's a unicorn, Jimmy. It's not a model. Don't model it.
I'm looking at a headline right now from The Athletic, and the headline, Andy, reads: "Did Cignetti and Indiana change college football forever?" I'm not sure. I think, you know, the other things, the free agency, the portal, NIL is what changed football. Kurt Cignetti just showed us how to best use it. And just because he's very good at that, Andy, doesn't mean somebody else can duplicate it, do it the same Correct. Way. Correct. But I think what you have to do as a coach is you've got to look and say, you know, how did this work? What elements of it can we take? And, you know, candidly, I said it forever, but he got the quarterback correct back-to-back years. And yes, it's partially his development, but it's also he selected correctly. Anybody correct. Could have had Curtis Rourke or Mendoza the last 2 years.
Correct.
But he went out and got them. He got the right guys, Andy.
So there's like 8 or 9 straws sitting on a table that you can pick from that are sort of in what you can identify as things that you could choose as Cignetti has sort of revealed for everyone in this new age of college football. And you should find the one that you think you can do well and can work for you. You shouldn't try and replicate his model. I think that strikes me as dangerous and risky. I don't think it can produce fruit because there's only one Kirk Cignetti. What is the one straw you can take that says, I'm going to do that straw extremely well? Whether it is, you know, everyone has to do the quarterback. I don't even count the quarterback as one of those straws on the table. Everybody has to try and is going to go for that one. It's what's the other one that you can grasp onto? That's as far as I go.
All right, Andy, that will be the final word, at least for this week. I'm sure this is a topic we're going to be hitting. We're going to be hitting it a lot during the off season, Andy. Thank you, Andy. Thank all of you for tuning in. Make sure you come back again next week on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Happy Valley United is the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. These opportunities allow student-athletes to engage with charitable causes and participate in business engagements to build their brands while making a positive impact. The collective connects fans, alumni, businesses, and charities with student-athletes harnessing the power of Nittany Nation. Go to happyvalleyunited.com to connect with your favorite Nittany Lion team.